Hello and welcome to the Classic Car Weekly podcast, the sibling podcast to the popular weekly title. I'm this week's host, Jesse Billington, and I'm joined today by the editor, David Simister. How are you?
I'm good, yes. Looking at it, a very autumnal day, but that's that time of year. There's plenty coming up. There's the London to Brighton Veteran Car Run, which I know we'll get onto later on, and lots busy prepping for the NEC Classic Motor Show as well, so I'm really looking forward to that too.
Yeah, autumn is certainly approaching, but it doesn't mean that the classic scene is getting any quieter. On a personal front, have you been out in your classics recently, or is it quiet on that front? And
it has been pretty quiet on that front, actually. So doing quite a lot of driving recently, but it's all been in rental cars to try and keep the miles off my classic. So I was up in Scotland for something which I'll talk about at a later date, and been down to Withall again for our final coffee meet of the year again. So racking up the motorway mileage, but glad not to be chucking up salt and water into the wheel arches of my own cars for a change.
Very nice treat for them to sort of have a bit of well-earned rest.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been quite on the front for mine as well. I haven't really had a chance to get it out. I've been here, there and everywhere the past few weekends with different bits and pieces taking up my time that haven't been MG related, and the Jimny is still waiting for its chance to get booked in to have its gearbox overhauled. That's currently leaking onto my grandma's driveway for a change.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it just protects the nice resin driveway we've got here instead. So I do need to get that sorted soon before the winter weather comes and I want my four-wheel drive back. But with that out of the way, we'll dive into what has been the big news recently in the classic car world, which is the FBHVC's big classic survey and, of course, their recent conference as well, David, which you attended.
Yeah, I did, and some really interesting results. I mean, I'll say the big thing was the release of this little document here, which is the National Historic Vehicle Survey, which is a big document. So they asked the classic car world for their thoughts on various things. 19,000 people responded, which is a huge result. And it gives a really useful insight into the movers and groovers of the historic vehicle movement. And it's really important because actually the results of these are used to help they're shown to MPs and various lawmakers to try and make sure that the laws and legislation that is passed is mindful of the old cars that we run around in quite regularly. So some really interesting results in there. One of the really big things is that they know that the historic vehicle movement is worth £7.3 billion a year to the nation's economy. So certainly I know that a copy of that has landed on Rachel Reeves' desk, so when she's considering the budget next month, hopefully she will be mindful of that and will hopefully give us something that is relatively friendly to classic owners.
Yeah, it's the numbers that always come out of these surveys are always absolutely fantastic because it shows how sort of willing and ready the classic community is to sort of rally around and sort of produce its own support in this case, but also just the sort of mind-boggling numbers. The FBHVC said the DVLA data showed there are now more than 1.9 million historic vehicles registered in the UK, which is a big increase over what we saw 5 years ago as well, which suggests that there's this flourishing sort of status of not just cars being preserved, but also kept on the road, actively registered as historic, taking part within that community.
Yeah, I mean, there is a degree of nuance to some of those numbers as well. So one of the things which actually made it onto our front pages this week is that the average age of the classic car owner in the UK has gone up from 63 by the FBHVC's measure, from 63 5 years ago to 66 now. So obviously, and they've pointed out in the survey that actually they need to do more to reach out to young enthusiasts. They've also talked about the fact that they asked about the ethnicity of classic car owners, and apparently 94% of respondents said they were white British. So again, there's moves to try and encourage a wider demographic to get involved with our hobby as well. So there's some really interesting things things in there. And one of the things that is a big part of the results this year is they've actually asked questions about what they call the young timer movement. You and I might talk about it as modern classic. So and what they said was that actually quite a lot of people who own historic vehicles generally tend to own cars that are made between 95 and 2005 in this case. So I know certainly both of us own cars in that bracket. So on most people that I talk to at shows, even if they own something that is tax exempt, they will generally have a more modern classic as well, whether they use it as kind of an interesting daily driver or they keep that for shows as well. Certainly it's really interesting for them to capture that information because it kind of gives you an idea of where the movement is heading as well.
When you look at sort of the future of the cars that are going to eventually become sort of tax exempt, fall into that sort of rolling 40-year exemption, it's great to see that these cars are already out there, already sort of getting this interest and preservation status. And you mentioned the statistic about sort of the average age of the classic car owner. This is something that's brought up at the HCVA conference as well a few weeks prior, which is that 70% of classic cars are owned by someone over the age of 65. And that's an inordinate number, really. And we do a lot to try and encourage the next generation into sort of the classic car world. And was there anything that came out of the FBHVC's recent conference that was looking at supporting getting younger owners into the classic scene, whether it's ownership or maintenance?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot of interesting things going on. I mean, certainly one of the other really interesting statistics is that you see the number of historic vehicles overall has gone up. The number of historic vehicle owners has gone up, but not by a huge amount. And when you actually dive into the figures, you can actually see the number of vehicles owned on average has jumped from 2.25, I think it was in 2020, to 2.8, which means actually more of those vehicles are going to people who are already in the hobby rather than people who are new to our industry. So again, there's more around that, but I mean, there's two themes around that. So one of them is around the funding to train up specialists, and again, we go into that in more detail in this issue, the reason why funding from the government is really, really crucial to help particularly bringing in apprentices to learn those new skills. But another part of it is the cost of living crisis. I mean, I was having a look actually, we talk about younger enthusiasts particularly, but there was a really interesting comment on CCW's Facebook page last night, and they were saying, well, actually, even the guys who even retired people and people who are sort of an older demographic, they're struggling with the cost of living as well. And if you're having to choose between paying the bills or having a classic car in the garage, actually it's usually the classic car in the garage that will always fall behind the essentials. And that's part of the reason why we've seen this big increase in classic cars being sold, and to an extent the reason why prices have softened over the last few years, because people are struggling to pay their bills in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I saw the same comment actually. It was interesting because it sort of talks, it's, you think the sort of established classic car owners are going to be the ones that are able to keep their cars on the road for longer and so on and so on. And you make the comment does make the interesting point of the fact that even just sort of the most basic elements of maintenance do cost a lot more now, and that's something that has to be taken into consideration. And you mentioned the training for apprentices, and when it comes to the restoration world, are we looking at a positive change here, or is there something else that's proving to be a bit of a hurdle for the FBHVC?
Well, certainly the number of people going in, I mean, considering back in 2017 when they started the Federation supported Heritage Skills Academy, they were talking only sort of a handful of people at that time. And I remember on Classic Car Week, we talked about there was a real shortage of people coming into the industry. And now they've got three different sites, two at Vista and one down at Brooklands Museum. And again, they're now bringing in, I think it's something in the region of 200 people a year into the industry, which is a great result. But the big thing they were talking about, again, is the funding they get from the government, because that apprenticeship funding is very much geared towards things like hairdressing and catering, which are cheaper to do with the best one in the world. You don't need to buy things like welding machines and so on if you train to be a hairdresser. And obviously the problem they're saying now is actually that funding, with all the things like inflation that we've been talking about, it doesn't go as far as it did in 2017.
It's trickier to get that same sort of financial sort of outlay to spread further when you need this sort of vital equipment. Again, a welding rig or a sort of workbench for an automotive workshop is far more expensive than a set of clippers for a hairdresser. But ultimately, are we still seeing sort of people signing up for these apprenticeships and engaging in that scheme, or are we sort of seeing a tail off?
And the really interesting thing was actually they talked about different age groups, and actually they found that some of the highest levels of interest in historic vehicles in general actually came from people who were under 35, which is a great result. So it's not as though we talk a lot about getting younger enthusiasts into the industry, and it's not that they're not interested, because the results here show that they clearly are. It's about giving them the kind of the opportunities to get behind the wheel of these wonderful old cars.
And these opportunities are important. And one of the things that I was sort of enjoying when I was reading your spread when it sort of came through was when younger enthusiasts get behind the wheel of sort of older cars, classic cars, the events they're going to, we're seeing a bit of a shift and a split when it comes to these as well.
Yeah, that's it. That is an interesting thing, because, and again, they talked about this at the FBHPC conference, the idea that actually it used to be very much the case that you'd go along, a car show was going along to a stately home on a Sunday. You'd have the car clubs all laid out, people on folding chairs, that sort of thing. The sort of thing that has been, for me, has been going since the year dot in the classic car movement. But increasingly, what we're seeing now is those very club-led events are seeing competition firstly from very high-end events, the sort of the salon privés of this world, but also actually those younger enthusiasts, they're not going to kind of the Bromleys and the Tatton Parks as much. What they're doing now is they're going increasingly more to sort of to breakfast meets and more informal runs, and these are things that are run through social media a lot of the time, so it's much more difficult to for clubs in particular to engage with them. So that's something which they, again, the Federation of British Historic Vehicle Clubs is very conscious of as well.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting shift, and I think it's one that potentially it's we've been fortunate enough to sort of observe the balance of that at Classic Car Weekly with our breakfast meets, which do have a sort of a variety of people turning up with a variety of cars. But equally, as a younger writer, as a younger person within that classic world, I look at where my friends and sort of my cohort of owners are going, and we're going to, like you said, those more informal meets, things like the Southside Hustle, Waterloo Classics, the sort of pop up for a sort of first Sunday of the month. We all meet up, have a coffee, have a mooch round, and it sort of dissipates. It's sort of that less sort of structured, less organized event. But do we think that there's still a future for sort of the whole range of them, or does the FBHVC sort of have this vision they're going to be able to sort of not necessarily oversee, but certainly sort of keep an eye on sort of what's going on with where?
I mean, one of the really big things that came out of this survey was that actually, effectively, the number of people who said that they attended events catering for classics has doubled since before the pandemic. So there's definitely an appetite and a market for them. And we've reported in Classic Car Weekly about various events that have been dropped for various reasons. We've talked about things like the Brighton Speed Trials, MG Live, things like that, which have been dropped for various reasons. And I think the really big thing in this current climate is about value for money. So there are lots of events where I've had conversations with people and they say, well, we just don't go anymore because it costs too much money to go. Things like those breakfast meets, the great thing, I mean, again, without wanting to plug our own event too much, our coffee and cars with all meet in Withall, that's great. We get really good turnouts for that because you can just turn up for free, have a look around some buses and have a cup of coffee, and then you can leave whenever you want. And again, people really engage with that because it's good value for money. So again, that's the challenge, I think, for event organisers, being able to offer something that A, turns a profit and is sustainable, but also B, is something where it's good enough value to encourage people to turn up, particularly clubs, in big numbers. And that's the really big thing that enthusiasts and event organisers are grappling with at the moment.
I know we've spoken, I know I've spoken with the other writers at Classic Car Weekly on the value for money side, and things like Race Retro, the Silverstone Classic have always been regarded as the great ones to go to, because not only do you have the classic car show that sits at the heart of it, where you can look at all the other classics, engage with the clubs, but there's always the additional thing for Race Retro. It's the live rally stage for Silverstone Festival, it's now the Silverstone Classic again. It's the live racing action that goes on alongside it, plus the music events. So there's always that little bit extra to sort of say it's a classic car event plus. I think that's sort of one of the things that's really seen sort of a strong attendance or sort of potential sort of steady growth across the years. But if we're seeing overall this sort of increase in the number of classic owners who are going along to events, getting their cars out in public, this is a good thing ultimately, I think, at the end of the day, if we're seeing more people engaging and going to these sort of shows.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, certainly the main thing that came out of the survey is actually the hobby is in a very good place in terms of the number of people who are there, the number of cars that are out there in the market. We've talked about all that, you know, the amount of interest. They talked about the a huge swathe of the British public are interested in classic vehicles and want to see them stay on the road. And a really important key part of that as well is actually cover fewer than 1,000 miles a year. They are responsible for less than, I think it's 0.2% of Britain's annual road mileage. So actually, the amount that they contribute in terms of pollution is minimal. So, and that is the argument which the Federation are taking to Westminster to say, you know, because there has been a lot of talk about things like tax exemption and fuel duty and so on, and say, well, you know, look, this is what we contribute as an industry to the nation's coffers. This is what we take out by comparison, which is minuscule. This is the reason why you want to keep, you know, these cars on the road.
Yeah, and equally, the FHVC highlighted that 22.7 million people see historic vehicles as an important part of our heritage, and it'd be a shame to start sort of devaluing that or only seeing it as a financial sort of currency that needs to be sort of traded upon. It's a more intrinsic thing to sort of British society as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the whole thing. It's huge. You know, the wider public actually see the heritage is hugely important. It's and there's a feel good factor to it as well. They talk a lot about the mental health benefits of classic cars, and there is a feel good factor. You know, if you know taking your you know going out and basically seeing these classic cars, whether they're in a meet in your town central center, you know, they bring joy to millions, and that is a really important part of it. So it's more than just about supporting jobs. It's about spreading a positive feeling, you know, which I think in this day and age, I think is a really important thing to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the two great examples of that from where I sit is the sort of Flitwick Classic and sort of interesting car show that we have every year. It's free to attend and it's right in the town centre, so everyone in the local area can get along and enjoy sort of older cars and sort of take part in the hobby as a bystander and actually sort of get a benefit from it. And also this weekend we've got the London to Brighton Veteran Car Run. It's free to attend and sort of spectate at any of its points along the route. There's the St James's Motoring Excellence Extravaganza that happens on the Saturday. I can't remember its official title, but that's again free to attend. You can go along and see all manner of cars from the dawn of motoring through to modern sports, super and hypercars, and it sort of encourages the general public into it and offers something for nothing, which is a rare thing in the classic car world, and plays an important part in sort of encouraging sort of cars into a positive limelight in the British society. On the flip side of this, one of the things that was raised at the conference was the rise in scare stories. And do you think that we, as a sort of piece of the media, have a role to play when it comes to sort of dispelling fake news stories and sort of offering a point of important sort of education?
Yeah, I think that is a very important role because I know that we've seen various stories being floated around online, which is sort of they generally start up on social media, and then some of the more some of them get picked up by the mainstream press. And I remember one in particular that we had to help the FHVC quash was the art was this there was a report earlier in the year that historic vehicles, which as we both know, a tax tax and MOT exempt. And for some reason, a rumour started doing the rounds based on the DVLA survey that these vehicles will be forced to undergo a new test later this year. And as I say, we're into the end of October now, and that hasn't happened. So I'm fairly certain that that story wasn't actually true. So, but again, the Federation, they have to do a lot of work nowadays in making sure that enthusiasts are kept properly informed. And certainly, I talked about that this earlier this week as well. Anything that we run in Classic Car Weekly, we are journalists, but we're also enthusiasts who live and breathe classics. And again, we make sure that if we are reporting anything, basically they are fully researched and looked into. So you can rest assured that when you open CCW, you read a story, it's generally going to be something that's researched by a classic car enthusiast and expert.
Well, we often go for a nice snappy headline. Ultimately, what we're trying to do is sort of dispel the fake news stories and sort of take you to the heart of it, which is it's quite nice when you sort of leaf through. Certainly our lead stories, the big stories and sort of the opening spreads of the paper. And there is a lot of really good journalism that goes into it without wanting to pat ourselves on the back too much. There is plenty of interesting bits that have come out of the FBHVC annual conference. Of course, you can read David's full reports on the conference in this week's issue on pages 4 and 5. And of course, if you've got back issues, you'll be able to enjoy the reports from the survey as well when that came out. So there's plenty more to come. And I assume that there'll be more from the FBHVC at the Classic Motor Show in November as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So the FBHVC will be having its conference on the opening day of the Classic Motor Show, which is the Friday, the 7th of November, I think I'm right in saying. That is going to be obviously, again, a really good chance to go and head along to the FBHVC stand. They will be able to give you chapter and verse on all the important things that they've been doing to help enthusiasts across the country over the past 12 months. They'll be announcing the results of how much money they raised on Drive It Day as well. Again, a really good positive event which gets classics out onto the road. So again, that's going to be a really important part of this year's Classic Motor Show, among with many other things that are happening across 7 different halls. It's and 3 days Britain's sort of flagship celebration of what we love as a hobby.
Yeah, there is a lot to look forward to at the NEC. We won't dabble on that too much because that is all still to come in a future issue of Classic Car Weekly. We get ready for ultimately one of the biggest classic motoring events on the calendar. And I'm looking forward to it. We've got some brilliant bits planned both as CCW and just generally across the weekend. So looking forward to that one. That should be.
That is presuming that you've dried out from the London to Brighton Veteran Car Run this weekend.
I will quite probably be dried out. We might as well touch then on the London Brighton Veteran Car Run, which of course, as we've already mentioned several times, is this weekend. And I'm thoroughly looking forward to it. And you mentioned drying out. I will be taking part in the run this year. I've been sort of itching to do this for quite some time. And I'll be taking part in a topless 1903 Clement four-seater. So I keep refreshing my Met Office forecasts for Brighton, Crawley and London, hoping for good news along the route. And we'll see how it goes, but especially because my barber jacket is currently in for repairs.
It looks as though the weather's forecast is better than what was it. I mean, I did the run in 2022 in a 1904 Dirac, and even though that did have a roof, that was the wettest I've ever been in my entire life. And I mean, really jolly good fun, but it was it was horrendous, the weather that weekend. So I'm hoping it'll be better for you, but again, we will be both of us will be down in London and on Madeira Drive on the south coast this weekend, looking at sort of all the various cars and putting together a big special report, which is going to be in next week's issue of Classic Car Weekly.
Yes, I remember the 2022 run from I won't say fondly, but certainly vividly, as I was stood on Madeira Drive waiting for you to come down. Obviously, your car had suffered a few mechanical hiccups on the way, which sort of delayed you endlessly, as well as the flooding in Brighton. It was atrociously wet, and it's a miracle I didn't get trench foot while I stood there for so long in just a puddle that was essentially the Brighton seafront. But yeah, that was a very wet weekend. Since then, we've actually enjoyed two very dry London Brightons. Last year's as well was spectacular because it was breezy but dry the entire time and very sunny, which made for some fantastic photographs. But yeah, this year's run looks to be fantastic. We're honouring 125 years of the 1,000-mile trial, which was this sort of opening sort of sort of debut of the motor car in the UK, where essentially sort of a series of them drove pretty much a lap of England and Scotland, showcasing the new personal automobile and what it can offer to you. So we've got a number of the original cars from that run that will be taking part in the London Brighton Veteran Car Run, and one of them is owned by the British Motor Museum, which has also given up one of its cars to a number of apprentices from sort of across the UK in the sort of motoring scene. And I know one of them, Connor, is looking forward to the drive as well, because I bumped into him at the Goodwood Revival and got chatting to him about it then. So they've got a lot to learn. Essentially, this is some drivers even younger than I am. So we're talking sort of 19, 20, 21-year-olds that are getting to experience these veteran cars for the first time up close, and hopefully going to have a good chat with them and try and work that into the coverage, because I imagine their stories and viewpoints will be fantastic. But yeah, if you're heading along, there are plenty of opportunities to spectate. Obviously, you and I are going to be in London on the Saturday for the motoring spectacle on Pall Mall.
Yes, it should be a really good sort of celebration of motoring. So I love the veteran car, and it's got an atmosphere quite unlike any other.
Yeah, it's going to be a good bit of fun. Motoring spectacle, 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. Plenty of chance, and as I already mentioned, completely free to attend. With, I think it's got four different zones in it, including sort of a zone about sort of education, supporting people into heritage engineering, the concourse and judging for the veteran car run, and obviously some bits celebrating other bits of motoring heritage, including the trophy from the British Grand Prix as well, as the motorsport celebrates its 75th anniversary. So you can go along and get a photograph with the first place trophy from the British Grand Prix, which is quite the special thing. And
Not
of
every day you
course,
get to do that.
yeah, not every day you get to do that. Worthwhile attending the event just for that, I'd say. But as then again, obviously there is the fun of the run. So yeah, I'm car 241. We're setting off at about, I think we're 7:15. We're pulling out of Hyde Park. So yeah, I'll be wrapped up, warm, and hopefully dry. We'll wait and see. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good bit of fun.
I definitely looking forward to it, and fingers crossed the weather holds.
Oh, it'll hold out. I've got a waterproof jacket for the box brownie, so at least I'll get some fantastic photographs if it doesn't. Anyway, elsewhere in this week's issue, we have plenty of bits to look forward to. Obviously, our lead news story this week also looks at youngsters being priced out of classics. I've already mentioned that. There are also buying tips for the later Volkswagen Beetles and a celebration of zombie cars, which was one that sort of got floated in one of our feature planning meetings. And I know we'd sort of debated how to fit this in, but I'm really pleased with how it's come together. I think Chris has done an absolutely sterling job.
Yeah, absolutely. A nice bit of Halloween related fun, before the witching hour starts.
Yeah, and a great chance to mention things like the Hindustan Contessa, which I'm sure rarely gets mentioned in Classic Car Weekly, but a rare appearance for that. And of course, the ever popular The Way We Were heads to Dover in 1984. Otherwise, David, unless you've got anything else to add, it's been a pleasure having you on this week.
As always, a pleasure, and I will see you in the capital this weekend.
I will see you there with my raincoat in tow, no doubt. And of course, to your listener, thank you very much for listening to the latest edition of the Classic Car Weekly podcast. We've got another issue of Classic Car Weekly to get preparing, so we're going to bustle off, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks very much.